Welcome to the Songs of Note podcast, where we talk about the songs we love and the stories behind them. I'm your host, Ryan Gregg.
Thank you so much for joining me for the Songs of Note podcast. This is a show where we talk about the stories behind bands and songs and albums. And I just love getting to go down rabbit holes of what happened in the recording of an album, or what happened in the process of writing an album. And for me, one of my favorite artists, especially in the time period for me, was junior high and high school, was Weezer. And I love Weezer, and I've been working to get Weezer onto this show because I love listening to them. And they're a band that has been able to maintain artistic integrity while still evolving and still being current. We kind of talk about this in the interview, but they are a band who is not a snapshot of their former selves, and that's not an easy thing to do for bands that are around for a long time. And Weezer's been around for a while, and for the rest of us that get to enjoy their songs. And so today I'm really pumped to be talking with the producer of their new record, Van Weezer, and her name is Susie Shin. And I just thought Susie's story was super interesting, and went and tried to get in touch with her and see if she'd be willing to come on the show. She has a very interesting background in the way that she got in touch with the band and started working with them as a younger producer, and then just to be given the reins to a gigantic project like Weezer, I just thought was so cool. And she was just great, so I'm thrilled that you're gonna get to hear that interview with her in just a second. If you're not already, please be sure to come follow me on social media at Songs of Note on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. There's the private Facebook group under Songs of Note, and love connecting and talking music. And thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes. And there's more than 70 episodes before this one. So if this is your first one, be sure to run back and check out some of those older episodes and see if there's some other bands that we're talking about that you might find interesting. And let's head on over to the interview. This is Weezer producer Susie Shin. Well, hey, Susie, thank you so much for taking time to come on the podcast today. It's really a thrill to get to chat with you.
Hey, Ryan, thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I have to tell you, when I saw that you would produce the new Weezer album, I was like, oh man, this is awesome. There's got to be a great story here. How did you get connected with this band? You've been working with Weezer for a number of years now, is that right?
That's right. Maybe like, I don't even know, 6 years?
Okay.
Maybe? I got connected ultimately through a couple things. Jake Sinclair, this amazing producer songwriter who I was his right hand man, girl, for about 5 years, and he produced the White Album, and I helped with that. And even beforehand, they were working, and I would help. And then also through my management, Crush Management, and we have the same managers as well. Okay. And so it was kind of like a gradual, over a course of however many years, relationship that kind of built between Weezer and me.
How cool is that? Like, do you remember? I just said, how cool is that? I just gave him. How I just cool gave him. Well, is that? When I went to you, I just did a Weezer quote. but do you remember, like, when you first heard them, like, do you remember initial impressions of them, and when you were younger hearing them way before you worked
with
them?
God, of course. Yeah, I was an illegal downloader. I was one of the kids of that era, and my mom got me this giant Mac computer that probably weighed like 40 pounds, to be fair. And I had LimeWire, and I downloaded the Blue album, but I had a really bad copy, so all the songs would skip. Like, I never knew who he was wrestling with. It was just so, yeah, like I loved Weezer, but then like, and I always respected them and I always loved them, but I was familiar with the Blue album, and it wasn't until started working on the White album and like really like the year before Van Weezer, where I discovered really Pink, which is I'm embarrassed to say, but like Pinkerton, I like really dove into, and it just like blew my mind. So yeah, I I love Weezer. Who doesn't love Weezer?
Exactly. Well, that's why I'm so glad to have you on the show, because I've been wanting to feature a Weezer episode. And it was like, okay, yes, we can talk about Weezer, because I have loved them since the Blue Album. And I remember buying Pinkerton the day it came out. Is it true? Are you younger than Pinkerton? Is that factual?
No, I don't think I am younger than Pinkerton. Okay.
But you are younger to already be working with like the top bands in the world. Like, how crazy is that? I mean, what an honor. I think that's so awesome and a real testament to your talent that you've been able to do that. I mean, how does that blow your mind when you're like, man, I've worked with all these great artists. Does that?
Yeah. Like every day it blows my mind. I try to have a level head, about it, but I don't love this word lucky, but I feel very lucky. Mm. And it's just like, it is really cool because literally everyone who I grew up listening to, I know, and I get to work with, and it blows my mind every day.
Well, that's pretty cool. You grew up in Wichita, Kansas. Is that right?
Wichita, Kansas, born and raised.
All right. So, well, I'm curious, like, do you remember, was there a moment or was there anything where you thought, okay, I'm going to do music. That's what I'm going to do. Was there any like specific moment where you felt that?
It's so funny. My entire life, my mom said like, I would be like in the car seat, like dancing and singing by myself, like with no music. And even like my mom was a realtor, and this probably is totally not okay, but she would bring me to all of her appointments. We couldn't afford a babysitter, and I would like chill in the car. And I remember like writing songs in the car and all the time. And like, even like she signed me up for voice lessons, and I was like 2-3 years old. And it's the only thing I ever wanted to do is music. Like, it was never even a question. Like there was never like, I want to be an astronaut or whatever. It was always music.
Well, that's pretty cool to have that focus and know that young and then be able to keep going after it. Is it true that you dropped out of Berklee School of Music after having an awesome time in LA interning somewhere? Is that true?
I don't know if it was an awesome time interning, but yes, I did drop out. It was kind of like, do I go back and finish and spend like $100,000 that I don't have, or that my family doesn't have, or do I just like start? Because I was like, if I finish, I'm going to come back to LA and have to intern somewhere else or just start all over again. Like, I'll still be cleaning toilets 100K out or not. So I stayed.
Was there in your decision, was there any element of, I know the key things I need to know to be able to take this to the next level, and the education side could taint what I know, like instinctively now? Do you know what I'm saying? When I word it like that, I don't know if I'm phrasing it well.
I think that you're phrasing it well. Yeah. It's kind of like, oh, take everything that you learned in college and then throw it out the window. Mm-hmm. That's exactly what I did. Okay. There was this rep that went around, which I think is on kind of still true. It's weird. I would hear about companies or producers or managers not hiring someone from Berklee for that exact reason. Like, they would come in like a know-it-all, or they'd be like, you don't know what you're talking about. This is how you do it. And I'd be like, oh my God, you can't tell the person who has like made music professionally for 20 years and owns a studio that's not how you do it.
Interesting.
So I always walked into everywhere being like, I know some stuff. I would not say that even. I'd be like, whatever I need to learn, like, I'm down. Like, show me how you do it. Show me, like, like, and it's just like, even if it was a wrong way or a different way, I would still like be absorbing knowledge. Like, there's more than one way to do anything.
That's interesting. This is random, but a John Mayer quote came to mind. And he had said one time that he didn't listen to the Beatles, and he thought that was a virtue for the fact that he didn't have all the same background influence in his songs and what came out of him. And I was like, number one, you're wrong, because everyone should listen to the Beatles. But two, I thought it was interesting in that that's probably true. Like, we've all come through a similar vein of hitting all these, you know, a lot of similar artists as far as what we're influenced by. And so that's interesting on the education side. You were able to say, I know enough to be able to keep going, and let's do this on my own. When you first started working with Weezer on the Van Weezer record, Was it a break from the way that you had worked with them in the past? Is like, were you engineering in the past and now you moved into a complete like producer role, or was it just a natural, we're just going to keep doing the way we've worked in before, or how did that process go?
The first day did feel weird. I was definitely like, what do we do? Like, both, it was just Rivers and me the first day. And we were both kind of like looking around and we're like, okay. And then he was like, okay, should we get to it? And I was like, yeah. You know, it was so great. It was hilarious, actually. But, you know, I first started off like as an assistant, like I would get asked to leave the room so that Jake and Rivers could work and they could write. And I would wait in the lobby, like go grab food if needed, like, et cetera. And then it progressed to engineering for the White Album. And then it progressed to like the Teal Album was I vocal produced, which was like vocal. Mm-hmm. Like I did all of the vocals for that album, and I would just send them back and forth with the producer. And so this, it was way different. It was just like, all of a sudden I had like all this responsibility and like creative, like leeway to kind of just say what I wanted and how I felt. Cause like it was the first time that it was like, okay, Susie, like you can give an opinion. Mm. It wasn't like you're crossing a line, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, when you decided to get to work on that first day, do you remember what the first song was that you worked on?
Yeah. Yeah. It was The End of the Game was the first one.
And did he have like a whole idea for the arrangement, or like did y'all work it out, or did like how did those songs come in?
We worked it out. He had a chorus. And I think it was a lot slower than what it ended up being. We tried like a million tempos. And then we figured out the arrangement, like based on that, like throw in some verses. Somewhere along the lines, we were like, let's come up with this like really cool intro. And we threw that in. Then we pulled the bridge. Am I a go-to? And then from another song, I think it was like an old Rivers demo, maybe early 2000s. And then I had him and Pat came in together and like recorded it and played through. But like even still, like probably even towards the end, like we were like splicing or changing the arrangement still. And, like the arrangement always changes. The arrangement is never set in stone.
Mm. But so the first song you guys worked on ended up being the album opener, The End of the Game. And is that you, Hey Susie, that he's talking about at the beginning?
Everyone always asks that. I don't think so. Okay. It's actually a fun, the lyric was Hey Baby for a really long time. And the day that it came down to, we have to send this to mix. He was in the morning, he sent a slew of names, maybe like 8 or 9 names. And it was like Sarah or very like Jimmy might have been in there. I think Jimmy stayed for a second, but ultimately like it was JD, Evan and me like on the email, and like I think Susie sounded the best at the time, so we went that. And then he was like getting on an airplane and like going to be unable to record for like 2 weeks, and I was like, okay, we have to choose something.
Nice. Well, I thought that was cool. I was like, oh, is that Susie? Well, can you for the people who don't know around the recording of this album and OK Human and COVID, can you kind of talk about the timeline of like how did this go, and was the recording stopped in the middle and then OK Human started recording? Like, can you talk about the timeline of that a little bit?
Worked on Van Weezer, and there might have been early 2019 when we like did the first two songs, End of the Game and Blue Dream. But we had finished all of the recording because we recorded November, December, and February, and March. I just remember the last day that we were tracking was the day before LA lockdown.
Oh man, crazy.
Yeah. So I had all of my files, and then I had to spend the next like month in my little room in my house, like finishing the album.
Oh, interesting. So did you have all the tracks to be able to just run with it at that point?
I had all the tracks, and if I needed to do overdubs or needed to reamp DIs like on the guitar, because I always get DI, I had my Mesa. It was so loud in my little room, and
that's awesome.
And I was doing it all there. Yeah, it was a chaos.
That's great. Man, well, what a COVID project. Not many people could say that they kicked off COVID with having here's all the tracks for the record and good luck and make it happen. How cool is that? I said it again. Ah, I got to stop it. well, the sound of the two albums are so different from OK Human to Van Weezer. Was that a big intentional move? I mean, obviously it was, but you know, why were they so different from like acoustic and piano sounding to just total hard rock on Van Weezer?
Oh, totally. Okay. So Okay Human had been started way before I think maybe even like the idea of Van Weezer like came about. And that was like Jake and Rivers really wanted to create this thing and make this like very song focused album that you listen to in its entirety and it's on tape. And like, I don't know if it was always at the beginning of the idea to like not have an electric guitar, like no electric guitars in it. And so that was existing, like that had been a thing already. And then like when the Hella Mega tour was put together and it was Green Day and Fall Out Boy and Weezer on this like triple headliner, like stadium tour, world tour, the idea came about like there should be an album that goes along with it. Cause it was based on this old tour, maybe called the Gods of Rock that happened in the '80s or the '90s.
Okay.
And they were like, we want an epic rock album that we can play the songs at stadiums. And it has huge guitars. And like the idea was presented to me. It's called Van Weezer.
Nice.
And I was like, sick. Let's go. So it ended up being two total opposite things. But I think it's really cool.
Well, totally. And it was like you see very completely different sides of the band back to back. Okay, so you hear that they want to do these type of songs. The album's going to be called Van Weezer. Were you thinking of any specific bands or like reference points for we should consider this album or this song? Or would they be really cool if they sounded like this? Were there any key things that come to mind?
Oh, for sure. And Rivers and I would like sit down for hours and listen to music to like, because we would take each song and reference a handful of songs and he had an algorithm built in his spreadsheet, you know, and it would like auto generate a Spotify playlist based upon this song charting, what is it in a similar plus or minus 5 BPM of our song, what key is it in, does it have an intro, does it have a guitar solo, etc.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it would generate like 100-200 songs sometimes, and we would go through it and it'd be like, that's really cool, like, oh, like how the guitars have chorus like in Poison, or like what about this like chord change here, or like, you know.
Okay,
so yeah, there was a lot of like Motley Crue, Slayer, Van Halen, obviously Crazy Train, but Ozzy Osbourne, a lot of those guys from that era.
Well, that is totally cool. Okay, so that reminds me of an article I read way back with Weezer, an interview at, you know, years back at this point. But I feel like he had made some comment about Kurt Cobain and his songwriting. And I think that I had read that he charted out almost every song and he was able to get it down to the formula that was used. And then he was able to use that formula on his own in some instances. Sometimes it's as simple as a verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, or whatever it is. But it made me wonder, somebody like that who seems very meticulous, very intelligent, to what level he would document something like that, take it apart. And did he ever talk about Nirvana? Have y'all ever talked about Kurt Cobain or his writing?
Oh, for sure. Like that was like also definitely in the album and the writing, the guitar playing, the solos, like definitely, I think that was, an influence in that.
Well, for Weezer, that's been around for a long time. I'm wondering how, stepping into the recording process for you, how are you able, you're kind of able to step, be outside of the band and look down into it. How are you able to view a legacy band, if I could call them that, like Weezer, and be able to try to put something new to it where you are honoring their past, but you also are trying to pull them into, let's keep this current, let's keep people interested, and not keep you stuck in a certain sound? Was that a mental headspace that was easy to step into, or am I totally off on even the idea of that?
No, I think it comes very naturally, because Rivers is so talented. Like he does have his algorithms and like the spreadsheet and like, here's what I want to do and here's maybe how I should do it. But like at the end of the day, it's so effortless, his talent, and it just sounds new. Like he writes a killer song. His guitar, like you can put whatever guitar in his hands and it sounds not dated. It sounds like, oh, yeah, you know, that's Weezer. Mm-hmm. So like, it's very easy, like with OK Human, with Van Weezer, like those, the music, like, it's not like we have to make it current. We have to make it, like, it's like, oh yeah, he just does that because it's so like, he's got it. Like he's one of those few people in the world that just like has it, you know?
I do. And it's kind of it's a little bit of an intangible thing where bands that have been around a long time, at some point they either keep going and keep evolving and stay current, or they are performing a snapshot of themselves from years back. And I've always felt like Rivers' voice, especially, and still, like you said, the songwriting have progressed through the years. And it's like, these are still great songs. These are current. Like this is not a band that is replicating the Blue Album, whereas they may be taking parts of like things that worked, but they're not stuck in a sound. And I hate that with bands that I like or have liked that stay stuck in time, so to speak. And that can just be such a bummer when you're like, man, I wish you'd step out and do something, you know, creative or more creative, or take a risk, I guess. And so I felt like, as a fan, I was like, yeah, this is awesome. I love this record. When you guys would sit down to record the actual tracks, would everybody in the band get together at once and you record the drums and the bass and go back and redo stuff? Or would it just be building the track piece by piece by piece? Or how did that process go?
It varied. Most of the time it was building. It was like having like each player come in. Like I like Rivers and I would put together a really bare bones demo where like everything gets recut. There were a few songs where I had Pat and Rivers at the same time, like drums and guitar, rhythm guitar happen. But usually like we'd take the demo, Pat would come in, we'd record the drums, Rivers would come in, we would record like the main guitar parts. Scott would come in, bass, Brian, lead guitar, extra guitar parts, and then Rivers would come in, do the vocals, and like, and then like kind of like sit back and be like, okay, what do we need to change now that we have everything here, if anything?
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Okay. Well, what about in the course of recording and having built up a rapport of working with them through the years and now stepping into a new situation, a new role? Was there ever like a moment, was there ever a tense moment in the recording that you had to kind of like work your way through and figure out like a new, this, like we haven't interacted in this way before and this is kind of tense, and then we worked our way through it. Was there anything like that comes to mind?
Maybe like a little tiny bit, but not really. I think it was generally, like, even if someone was in a bad mood, like we were all here for the right reasons. Mm-hmm. But I never got into any fights with anyone. There was one day where Scott drove like 2 hours in traffic to come to the West Side to record his bass. And then like the studio had all these flies. Like there were, it was so gross. There had to have been like 50 flies. No one knew what it was from. There were flies all over us. Okay. And he was trying to record the bass and he was like crying, laughing. And he's like, I can't. he stopped recording, playing, and I was just like, I'm so sorry. He's like, excuse me, I'm not coming to the West Side ever again. We have to go to the East Side next time. And I was like, yeah, okay.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah, well, I was gonna ask if there were any funny moments. That's pretty funny. Were there any other funny, like, funny moments that come to mind?
Oh my God, there were so many moments. The whole album was a blast. You know, each of those guys are so, like, hilarious and charming and their own ways. But I don't know, like, even like that fly day, like right before, like Rivers left right before, and we were having issues with the flies, of course. And like, he turned off all the lights in the studio because he was like, the flies don't like light. And then he just left. And I was like, sitting that's in awesome. Pitch black. Yeah.
That's funny.
Like, in silence. And I was like, what the?
Well, do you remember once the album was done and mixed and all the changes were made? Do you like remember, was there a moment of like feeling like Rivers or the band like had accepted you in the new role, or like did you feel this big moment of finishing?
No. I mean, I always thought they accepted me. I love those guys. But you know, we finished the album, we got it mixed and we got it mastered. I thought the album was coming out, I want to say like May 7th or May 15th of 2020. And it wasn't until May 2nd that, or like really 2 weeks before the album was supposed to come out, did we find out it was going to get delayed indefinitely.
Because of COVID.
And so my heart just like sunk. Like I was just depressed. And I was like, you know, I was like, oh, I've been working on this for a year and a half, maybe even 2 years, like so looking forward to this date that I had, that I would, in my head, I'd be so proud. And it just like, it came and went. But I'm still happy. I'm happy it came out this May. Like, it's so freaking cool. And I'm really proud of it now. I was proud of it back then too, but.
Well, yeah. And especially the delayed gratification of now it's finally out. It's gotta be huge. What would you, if you got to do another Weezer record tomorrow, is there anything that you would think, oh, I want to try this, or this time I want to see if they'd be up for trying this?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, like I would still keep guitars in there. I would have a very different way of recording the drums, I think. And like my approach to the drums, I think I would have Rivers and Pat together for all of it. And then just like finding a really great batch of songs again. And kind of like even like more like hands off. Like I wouldn't try to make it sound like as huge as Van Weezer. But yeah.
Nice. That's great. And yeah. So last question, what's next for you? What other things are you working on or looking forward to?
Looking forward to so much. I'm working with a handful of artists that I adore, and they're all female bands or even non-binary. There's just like this rock world. Like I'm not putting, but there are guitars in hands of people right now, which maybe didn't happen like 5 years ago as much. And I'm so stoked. So it's like Cherry Glazer, Carol's Daughter, this artist called The Blossom. Like I'm working with those kind of bands a lot. And I'm going on tour with The Blossom later this year. I'm going to play bass in their band. And I'm just like so stoked.
Oh, that's cool.
On life. And I'm really excited also to like dive into another like full album and project, which I hope will happen soon.
Well, super cool. Well, Susie, thank you so much for taking time to come chat on the podcast about your experiences producing the Van Weezer album. For people listening, you can check Susie's website out at susieshin.com and find her on Instagram and Twitter at Susie Shin with two N's. Thank you so much for your time today, Susie. Greatly appreciate it.
Hey, thanks, Ryan.
Thank you for listening to the Songs of Note podcast. Be sure and subscribe so you don't miss an episode. See you next time.